You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia. Yes, I'm back in the city after many days on the road as an enrichment guide for a Colombian company here, taking Americans and citizens from the UK around Colombia to some of the most known sites and some relatively unknown sites. So I'm happy to be home, happy to be here, and happy to be back online talking to you, my listeners out there, for this episode 192 of Columbia Calling. And yes, as we're back in the studio once again, we have a very special guest, Christine Herman, on the line from Minnesota, up there in the heartlands of the US. And she's got some stories to tell, not only about a visit to Columbia, but also family, let's say, in Columbia, distant family, close family. But it's, you know, in the same kind of vein that we have been investigating before. Some of you will know that I've had Marcia Engel from Plan Angel on the show a couple of times. Well, this is related. This is related to that kind of story. So let me just say, Christine, welcome on the show and welcome on Columbia Calling.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you having me.
It's a real pleasure to have you too. Now, I'm really, really thrilled because you wrote me an email out of the blue, and you've just been down to Colombia between, you know, the very beginning of June. So this is hot off the press. And you wrote an email and you've been listening to the podcast. But give us a little bit of background. Why were you in Colombia?
So our trip to Colombia started with my husband, who I have been with for 13 years, was adopted from Bogota in 1976 from Casa de la Madre El Niño. And when I first met him, he, you know, told me that he had been adopted. And I was just like, oh my God, you know, have you found your mom? Have you looked? And 8 years ago, I started my search, and that's what eventually brought us to Colombia, was to finally connect with his biological mother after years of searching and meeting up finally a couple weeks ago in Bogota.
Incredible, incredible. And it took 8 years for this search. Can you give us a little bit of information of what this search entailed? Because I know I have a lot of listeners out there who are, you know, in a similar situation to your husband.
Yeah, my husband was, I would say, minorly closed off to it, but, you know, a little bit interested in finding his biological family. But like a lot of adoptees, he was very nervous on what he was going to find, if it was going to be good or bad. And 8 years ago, I, with his permission, just put his information on a blog site and was contacted by an investigator who found this woman rather quickly. And so my husband was kind of skeptical about it. And, you know, I made a deal with him that there would, you know, be no money exchanged until there was confirmation through DNA. And 8 years ago, I mean, DNA was not anywhere where it is today. So we were going through a company called DNA Diagnostics. And my husband finally got to a point where it was time for her to give her DNA, and the investigator was asking for money, and I think it just tipped my husband over the edge a little bit, and he was like, I'm just done. I think he got a little bit nervous. He wasn't ready for it, and that was 8 years ago. And then until recently, another Minnesota adoptee had found her family, and my husband had, just about 6 or 7 months ago, got really connected through Facebook with adoption groups. And he saw Marissa's story. And Marissa was kidnapped when she was younger and finally found her family. And then when her mother came up here, she tragically passed away in a car accident. And her story is what finally pushed my husband to say, my life is too short. I need to find my family. So we were connected with an investigator in Florida, and she, with the help of, her name is Consuelo, in Bogota, would go to his mother's house. And so they found this woman, and we thought it was her. And through, you know, persistence of these three women, they would go to her door daily, and the and his mother was scared, and rightfully so. But finally, they earned her trust, and my husband had wrote a letter, and it was translated into Spanish, and finally, they were able to make a connection.
It's incredible, isn't it? It's incredible, this. And as you said, you know, your husband pushed towards the, you know, given the impetus by the tragic story of Marisa, and so that, you know, life's too short. So, but what I find so fascinating and so very heartbreaking, of course, you know, I mean, your husband was adopted age 3 months back in 1976. So basically, we're exactly the same age, he and I. So
yeah, it was 3 days, actually.
Wow, 3 days old.
Yes. Yep. 3 days old.
Wow. And so, you know, documents were signed, et cetera, et cetera, and then sent to Minnesota. And he was raised by a Jewish family in Minnesota. So let's talk about his identity. I mean, he must have suffered some sort of crises over the years. I don't know how his family raised him, but raised him of the Jewish faith, but knowing that he wasn't, and there's something behind that.
Yeah, and I think he went to a Hebrew day school from kindergarten to eighth grade, and wonderful school, wonderful community. Family was, you know, a normal family. They had their ups, their downs, but a wonderful family. And however, he always knew he was different. And it was, he struggled with that when he was in his teens. And it was, you know, just, you know, a little bit rebellion, you know, for any teenager. But it was always that he, one thing that sticks with me is when he had his first child, he said, that was the first person that I saw in my entire life that looked like me. And so it was, a major moment for him. But growing up in Minnesota, it's really weird because we see two different sides of it. I have, you know, seen people say, you know, racist things to him or something. And he literally, it just rolls right off of his back. He doesn't even give it 2 seconds. And he'll look at me and say, you know, I'm used to it. And so it's so sad, you know. And so there was some identity, and there still is right now, where if he is very accepted in that faith. They are very open to him. Every time I've been to a synagogue, I have never, you know, seen anything. But it is a bit of a, we thought it was, you know, very rare, but come to find out that there was a lot of Colombian children that were adopted into Jewish families.
Really? It's interesting. And I find, you know, the era as well, you know, sits amongst so many of the other stories I've heard, the 70s, the 80s, when the adoption business from Colombia was, of course, incredibly lucrative. It's almost like, as Marcia Engel always says, is legalized child trafficking.
Yes.
I mean, everything, yeah, of course, on the Minnesota side was completely legal. But I do understand that your husband's mother did give him up for adoption voluntarily.
Yes, she did. And my husband is so fortunate, because a lot of adoptees that we meet, their stories are not, you know, wonderful stories with happy beginnings and happy, you know, endings. And my husband is so fortunate to have had such, you know, a really a positive story to have as an adoptee from Colombia in the 70s, where he was voluntarily given up by his mother. And it was because she had two children already, and she couldn't afford to have a third. She was already struggling with the two. And so she, you know, willfully signed all of the documents. And, you know, thank God for his adopted mother, who is the best record keeper I have ever seen in my entire life. But, I mean, he literally had every single piece of paper that she had when she adopted him. So we had his mother's cedula number, her fingerprint, her signature, you know, a birth record. And then she also published a book called Baby from Bogota, which literally told the story from the second that the orphanage, Casa de la Madre El Nino, called her to come down there, that he had been born, and then she showed up in Bogota 3 days later. So he is so fortunate to, and then to be adopted into a good family, have a good upbringing, and then to be reconnected, and his family in Bogota are the nicest people I have ever met, and I've never felt so close and felt like I was with my own family immediately. So he is so fortunate to have such a great story all around.
Yeah, a lot to do with this is this meticulous, let's say, documentation, the documents kept by his adoptive mother, because without the cedula, the ID numbers, and without these fingerprints and so on and so forth, you know, you're very much at a loss. You're very much in the dark and having to do this. But of course, through DNA, things are facilitated today. But when I've had the opportunity to meet with other adoptees coming to Colombia, they have nothing. They have to go to the Institute of Child Welfare, and then a search is put on, and months and months and months may pass, and people may not have the will to continue as investigators, as does the Colombian bureaucracy can be very challenging at times, let's say. So he had a lot in his favor, your husband there, due to this meticulous, adoptive mother, and of course documenting everything in a book, Baby from Bogota. Now I understand that you're working on this to have it reprinted.
Yes, I am. The family used to joke up here how she had boxes and boxes of these books, but through the years, we can't find any more copies on Amazon. And so I did get permission from her to get it into digital format, and then also have it republished. And then I'm working with some of the other adoptees to get it translated into Spanish. So you know, people who don't speak English can read it, and then also so his mother, his bio mother, can read it also.
It's phenomenal. What a story. Let's take a break. That's a good point there for a break. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with Christine Herman, who's up there in Minnesota, talking about her husband and it's the search for her family, which ultimately, of course, was very successful as a happy ending. And, of course, you know, not the story that everybody has when they're in this situation. So it's an intensely personal conversation right now. And talking about the situation, the identity and reality of children adopted from Colombia in the 70s, 80s, and of course this continued up into the 90s, where it was a business. It was a business rather than it was a business at this site here in Colombia anyway. And then now, of course, in this era of insanely fast connections and the internet, you know, that these children, now adults, can find out where they're from and perhaps, hopefully, track down, if they want to, of course, their biological parents, their biological mother and father. So we're talking to Christine Herman. This is Columbia Calling, episode 192. We're going to take a short break and be back in just a minute. Don't go away. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota, Colombia. So, yes, this is episode 192. And as you well know, we're talking to Christine Herman in Minnesota. Christine, I think it's really interesting that we've been talking about this, you know, your husband Mike and his upbringing and, of course, the happy ending and meeting his mother. But tell me something. But, you know, I've met other adoptees and I've had them on the show, in fact. And your husband was raised in Minnesota. I've met a guy who was raised in Michigan and another guy who's raised in Michigan, Wisconsin, and another in Iowa. Is it something out of the Midwest that there are a lot of adoptions from Colombia? I mean, it seems quite unusual.
Yeah, we were also, once my husband got onto Facebook and started connecting with people, it was a shock to us too that you will run into other adoptees and, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Iowa. I'm from Minnesota. And we even were down when we were in Colombia, ran into somebody who is now living in Colombia, who grew up in Minnesota also. Huh. And so it must have been a Midwest thing, or, you know, who knows? Were they advertising? I know there was a lot of Christian based or faith-based adoption agencies at that time that were connecting families with Colombia. But yeah, it was a shock to us too when we first discovered it.
Because you would think Minnesota is not your first port of call, and either Wisconsin, Iowa, and stuff. You think of the big cities. I had a friend at high school in New Jersey who was adopted, but you know, New Jersey, New York. But the issue was she was just taken up as a baby on the plane and handed over to her new family. I mean, pretty much.
Yeah.
Minnesota takes, I think, a bit more of a connection than that. But I find it absolutely fascinating. And of course, it's so wonderful, you know, because the opportunities given and so on and so forth. Of course, they're not the same for everyone. And it's not that, you know, that your husband got the best family and has lived a full and incredible life. And well, I guess he's 40. Now, so but I think you were telling me once, and we were talking earlier about identity. There have been issues as well. I mean, before he really found and pursued, let's say, this investigation, and you with your doggedness on this, how did he sort of, let's say, how did he express himself in not knowing really his identity and where he was from?
You know, it's something that he has struggled with his entire life, being raised in a Jewish community. I mean, it's predominantly white. Sure. And so he knew at a very young age that he was different. And he, you know, that he didn't necessarily, and these are his words, where he felt like, it's like, I was accepted, but I never felt like I fit in. Uh-huh. And his adopted mother, still to this day, absolutely adores everything that he does. Uh-huh. And so, I mean, he was just surrounded with a woman who, you know, gave him unconditional love. So he was able, you know, to overcome those feelings. But then when he got into his teenage years, he rebelled. And I guess, you know, everybody at that time is looking, you know, for themselves a little bit, you know, deeper. Hmm. And he did have his son at 18, which is young.
Yep.
But he remembers the moment when he saw him. And he said it was the first time in my entire life I had seen someone that looked like me.
Sure.
And so it was just a huge moment. you know, in his life. And I mean, he was raised Jewish, and that's the faith that he knows. However, I wouldn't say he's practicing, but, you know, he was raised, he can, you know, read Hebrew and, you know, can speak, you know, Hebrew, and not fluently by any means, but I, you know, he had to take 8 years of it so he can, you know, read it minorly, but then not to speak any Spanish. So, I mean, I learned to say, I don't speak Spanish either, but we've gone on vacations, you know, around the world, and I know one sentence in Spanish, and it is "Mi esposo adaptado de Colombia no habla español."
So it's your defense.
Yeah, because he has always been very embarrassed by the fact that he doesn't speak Spanish, and that's something that he has struggled with. And now going to Bogota, just being there for the 9 days that we were there, it's just amazing what you pick up in such a short amount of time. So it's really just immersing yourself in your culture, and you'll pick it up.
Yeah. So let's talk about this happy ending. So the DNA, you know, obviously came up as correct, mother to son, etc. And you found where the mother was the one that had been identified early on, but you know, wanted to ensure this, because I have heard stories of people being paired with a biological parent that isn't their own, just out of convenience, I think. But so Mike's mother lives in Suba, which is, so you know, sort of northwestern Bogota. And so you went and visited her home. You went and visited her in home. How was this experience? Tell us a little bit about the imagery of Suba.
Suba is, I have to say, Colombia is nothing of what you're raised as an American to think it's going to be. It's absolutely beautiful country from the second I was there until I left. But when we traveled to Suba, so we were staying in Bogota, and, you know, it's funny because it takes an hour to get anywhere in Bogota, it seems like. Even if it's 7 miles or 10 miles, it's going to take an hour. So we got to Suba, and we were met by his sister. We did take... it was taking so long for us to get there in a taxi. We finally got out of a taxi and just hopped on a little bus that was packed with people. And I finally got a seat, and we were with about five other people, my best friend, some translators, and his sister. So we're packed in this little bus, and I mean, I fell asleep because I finally got a seat, but the feeling of community is something that I took back from Colombia that I just am almost fiending for right now. The welcoming that I got from being on a bus, you know, crammed with people. In the United States, it's, you know, people, you know, are afraid to kind of touch each other. And on this bus and, you know, going to Suba, everybody is, you know, we're okay to touch each other. We're okay to lean, you know, a little bit. You know, everybody's crammed into this small space. So we got off in the plaza. And then it was kind of a surreal moment because it was like, okay, are we supposed to, you know, be crying at this point? And you just kind of like, I want to get there. And I'm just, you know, looking at my husband every 5 seconds, like, are you okay? Are you okay? And he was fine. He was, you know, he was just in heaven in his culture. And I said that his eyes, I swear, looked like they were a different color because he was so happy. But then with cameras rolling, you know, iPhones and GoPros, and we knocked on her door, and the door opened, and they met each other, and it was just, you know, a long hug. And she doesn't speak English, except she can say I love you, and And so they hugged each other. And from that moment, and it was just amazing to me as an outsider. So, I mean, and my husband says the same thing. It was family from the moment that we met them. And we got into conversation, and it was like we all had known each other for a lifetime.
This unconditional bond that's always just there, and I'm just unbelievable, this experience. Now, I want to wind back a little bit and talk about that. You were in a taxi heading there, being guided by Mike's sister. He had met his sister before. This is his birth, his biological sister as well?
Yes. She actually was the one who reached out to him first.
Wow.
His mother had never told anyone in the entire family that Mike even existed.
Right.
And so finally she, after we got in contact with her the second time, she told her oldest daughter, and that was his sister was the one who actually called him on the phone out of the blue one day, and she doesn't speak English and he doesn't speak Spanish, so they were trying to communicate and they were just laughing because they could not figure out what they were saying. She finally started saying WhatsApp, which is, an app where you text message back and forth. And he was like, oh, WhatsApp, WhatsApp. So then they got onto WhatsApp, and through her writing, my name is Martha, and this is my mother, basically, who are you? And he used Google Translate and, typed out in English, I am Michael, and this is my mother, and I think you're my sister. And they, I think, have talked on the phone every day since. Those two are joined at the hip, and were literally joined at the hip the entire time we were in Colombia. And so she met us at the airport along with my husband's other sister, who he hadn't talked to a whole lot, but we got to know a lot better when we were there. Two of the sweetest women, and I am so fortunate to be able to call them my sisters, my sister-in-laws.
Incredible.
And so she was the one that took us over to his mother's house, and she knew we were coming.
Yeah. Would be a pretty shocking surprise. I mean, shocking in a good way, but pretty earth-shattering if I show up there. But she knew you were coming, and you were on. So you're on this bus, let's say, swaying between the bodies, being held up by the bodies. I can imagine it. Anyone who's been to Colombia can imagine this perfectly. Like in the US, you say, or in Canada, or Europe, personal space is of a premium, but here it doesn't exist. and you got to Suba, and of course Suba, it's I would say the area is more of a working class area, but he fit right in, right? Mike was at home. You said, I mean, I love that image that you've got. His eyes shone a different color, and he knew this is where he was from.
Yes, and he says that he, for the first time in his life, he looked around and everybody looked like him. And no one was looking at him like he was out of place.
Yeah.
So, and he has mentioned that several times to several people since we have gotten back. So I know that it was something that really, moved him. And he did, he got a tattoo just to, while he was there to make sure that he, remembered this moment. And he, on our last day, he woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and he speaks about, this time he was by himself. He got into a taxi, met our brother-in-law, had breakfast at his sister's house, and then they hopped on the motorbike of my brother-in-law and went and were zipping through the morning traffic in Suba. And my husband, who, you know, rides motorcycles at home, he was saying it was just fascinating. He was like, it was just 100 motorcycles out there, everybody trying to get to work, you know, kids on the motorbikes, sleeping still, you know, everybody up there trying to beat the rush, trying to get to work. And he said it was just the most wonderful feeling. And then to see, you know, the tattoo artist open his shop and, you know, take the locks off. And he sat there for, you know, 4 hours and just kind of watched, you know, Suba go by. And he felt like, and his mom came to the tattoo shop and his sister. And he was just, he felt like he was at home. He felt like he was in so, you know, he was whole, you know, like he was being filled up with the void that he has had for so long.
Incredible. And you were down. I mean, it is incredible. And I can only imagine that first experience. It's a vibrancy of life, you know, down here a little bit. The motorcycle zipping in and out, four people of a family on one and everything. And of course, if he's a motorcycle rider himself, then he understands this fully. But you were down here from the 1st till 9th of June, but you came down with other adoptees.
Correct. Yeah, we, through, with the help of Nicole Culverhouse, and she's, you know, really an advocate for adoptees to find their families in Colombia. Her story is amazing also. If you just Google Nicole Culverhouse, Colombia, you'll see a clip of her story. Yeah. She brought together a group of five adoptees, and the other four were from the East Coast, and they had known each other from other adoptee gatherings, Colombian adoptee gatherings, and they had planned to go down, and right when Mike's DNA test came back as a match, I mean, we were booking the very next day. So we were there with Nicole and then the other adoptees. We all did stay in an apartment together. Mm-hmm. And that was a really great experience also, because some hadn't found their family and were there for more information. And just Michael and one other woman, Christina, who is the sweetest girl, she found her family. And it's just to be able to give support to whatever, you know, wherever you're at in your journey, just to be able to, you know, support somebody, because it's not, you know, an easy thing. And, you know, not finding information is hard, and sometimes finding information is hard. And so just having that added support. And and I was down there, and my best friend who travels the world, we told her we were going to be in Bogota. So she met us down there and, we just, you know, took in, you know, Colombia and we did travel, you know, outside of Bogota with another one of the adoptees, and was able to witness, her reuniting with her family, which was an amazing experience for an adoptee to be able to see another adoptee, you know, meet their family. I mean, it's just beautiful.
And this took place, this other reunion, where did this take place?
That was in Guadavita, which is, we went out and took a day trip, and we had translators, which were Nicole's younger family members that are, they're learning, English. So Andreas, which is, and Carol, two of the sweetest, they were 17 and 18, two of the sweetest kids I've ever met in my life. And, my husband and I, my best friend, Nicole, the two translators, and then Christina, we all got into a van and drove out to Guadavita, which beautiful trip there, you know, to see the countryside and the houses and the farms, and I always thought it was going to be more tropical, but it was just the greens and the lakes. And I mean, we're from Minnesota, so the lakes up here, you know, that's what we know. But it's just like the lakes, they were just so beautiful, and the farms and that town. I have never seen just the natural beauty of these people. And I tell Christina that I'm just, their teeth were amazing and their skin, and the town was so community. There must have been at least, you know, 15 people who saw this large group of people that they knew. And then they'd walk up and it would be, you know, somebody from the town that they knew. And, you know, Christina would be introduced. And Christina fortunately taught herself Spanish. So she was able to communicate with her family, which bravo to her. I mean, it was amazing. And we, you know, sat and we ate at a restaurant out there and went to the church and was at a coffee shop, and her family, you know, also embraced her.
Wow.
And her mother, unfortunately, wasn't there because at the last minute she got so overwhelmed and had like a breakdown, and so she wasn't able to be there that first day, but her brothers were there. And that's another thing that I want to tell adoptees. I mean, if you know, don't connect with your biological mother, father, your brothers and sisters will give you support. And I've seen that, you know, with Christina's story and also Michael's, the love and support that your siblings give you is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And I say that Columbia, what I have taken back is Columbia is about community and family, where in America, things tend to be about money and stuff. And so, and I witnessed that through these two families who had never met each other before, and just the love and the embracing, you know, from the siblings it was amazing.
Incredible.
And yeah, so Guadavita was beautiful, just absolutely beautiful. I would think that it would be like a tourist destination for people maybe who live in Colombia to get out to the country, is what I took in. I'm not sure if that's true or not. Yeah. But it would definitely be, if somebody is ever traveling to Colombia, a place that I definitely would stop. It was just it was beautiful.
Yeah. Because the scenery is spectacular, and of course the legend of El Dorado in there and the lake, and I mean, Guatavita's a very special place. I mean, I have to say, this story, the both stories, not only Mike's but Christina's as well, I mean, they're just, they're tearjerkers, aren't they? I mean, these are,
oh yes, I cried so many times of pure happiness.
Sure I guess the final question here as we wind down is, well, when are you coming back to Colombia? Because you clearly have more than an affection for this place.
Yes, more than. So I have never cried as hard as I did in an airport, both my husband and I. And it just so happened that a reggaeton, It wasn't a famous one, but I guess it was somebody who was on a TV show was playing these songs at the airport. So, I mean, we had theme music, and we were leaving, and we were just sobbing. Just, I mean, we were on the runway still sobbing, in the air sobbing. And my husband and I just looked at each other and said, we want to go back. We hadn't even really left. And we wanted to be back. Yeah. And we are fortunate enough we both have children from previous marriage. We do not have any kids together. And our youngest are about to graduate high school next year. And so we found out that Mike still holds his, when you are born in Colombia, you never lose your citizenship.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So his sister went to the register and got his birth certificate. We just got his birth certificate this week in the mail through FedEx. And once I am done speaking with you, I'm going to be calling the Colombian consulate in Chicago and making sure that we get the right forms filled out so he can get get his citizenship back. And then once the kids, from this moment on, we are, our whole life is going to be really working towards moving to Colombia full time and living down there with, you know, his family. And people say, you know, people, I come back and I say that to them and people are like, what? You know, isn't it, you know, the gorillas, you know, aren't you afraid you're going to get tied to a tree in the jungle? And I am, you know, I say to them, and this is an honest feeling, I felt safer in Colombia than I do in the United States. I saw a gun, you know, one time, and it wasn't even on a police officer. I mean, it was on somebody who was doing security. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, we are looking into, you know, I'm trying to do as much research as I can. And so that's why I found Columbia Calling. I was listening to all the podcasts, just trying to soak in all of the information, you know, what businesses should we do? If, you know, we were to open a business, you know, what areas would it be good to live in? We would love to live in Suba. Our whole family is in Suba, and we don't want to come and disrupt, you know, oh, we're, you know, on the other side of Bogota. Yeah. It's like, no, we would, you know, we're looking for houses in Suba or an apartment, and I am more than excited to literally be living full time in Colombia. And I mean, I even got a little tattoo of Colombia with the Colombian flag on my ankle. And I don't get tattoos. And right. So, it meant that much to me that I'm in love with Colombia.
This is so heartwarming to hear this story. I hope will you know, wake some people up to the realities of this wonderful country that's, you know, that I call home and have been here for 10 years. I want to say, Christine, that how privileged, let's say, not only we are to listen to a story from someone so positive, but how privileged Mike is to have, you know, his partner, his wife, so understanding and excited and open to this new experience, because that's what it is. I mean, it wouldn't be everyone who'd say, let's go to Colombia. This takes a strength in character and a real, let's say, embracing of the unknown. And so my congratulations to you both. And I'm overwhelmed by your story, and not just the adoption side and the finding, but the willingness to try something new.
Yeah. Mm. Yes. And it's, you know, it's something we both had children when we were younger, and we said that, you know, when our kids get older and we're still younger, you know, let's go do something. And we always thought we would end up, you know, kind of in the Caribbean.
Right.
And when we went to Colombia, we're like, I mean, it was like the timing was meant to be.
Yeah.
Because, and I mean, and a lot of people say that they're like, you're very supportive and you're, he's so lucky. And it's funny because this really is who I am. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, yes, I love that man, you know, so much, but it's, I have something invested into it too, to where I am so happy, and it's happy is not even the word, just to be able to see him be able to live in his culture. Mm. And I'm excited to be able to be immersed in another culture.
Excellent.
Than the one that I grew up in, because I was so accepted in Colombia. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just so excited to, you know, get down there and and learn Spanish.
Yes. Important. Important.
Yes. Yes.
Well, let me take this moment, Christine, to say thank you so much for getting in touch with me and then sharing this story, not only with me, but with all of my listeners out there. It's been really revealing, emotional as well, and just incredible. And when you're next in Colombia, please let me know. And when the book is republished, Baby from Bogota, first published in 1979, when it's republished, let me know so I can share the news out on the social media and you know, get a copy of it myself to read, because you know, these stories aren't everyday stories; they're incredible.
Right. Yep. And I will definitely let you know for sure and get connected with you.
Yeah, definitely. It would be wonderful to be able to meet up in person. So once again, thank you. I mean, we have to draw this wonderful conversation to a close now, but thank you so much. It's been a fantastic episode. I know my listeners out there will be thrilled and emotionally moved as well. Of course, anyone out there with a story to tell, Colombia related, that's, you know, get in touch at ColombiaCalling@gmail.com. I respond to every email. So, and it may come into fruition that we do a podcast together or so on and so forth. So let me just sign off saying once again, thank you so much, Christine Herman, up there in Minnesota. I've got nothing more to say because Christine has said it all. This has been Colombia Calling, episode 192. I'm glad you've enjoyed this show. And of course, tune in next week where we'll have another interview up online so you can stream it, listen to it. iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Podbean, we're there. We're on all of these platforms. Thank you again. Goodbye.